Welcome back, listeners, to our new episode of A Real Page Turner with Donnie Granza and Mara Maros. Hi, Donnie.
Hi, Mara. Excited to be back for another episode here.
Yeah, so this week we have an exciting twist to our episodes. We are going to go down another path and not talk about a specific book or movie this week. We are excited to have a guest with us, Jennifer Cooney, who is a writer, director, producer, published poet, and she has a production company called Half Jack Generation, which has a film produced, Rainbow's End, which is streaming on Lesflix and was awarded the Audience Award Favorite Feature Film at the QFlix XL Virtual Edition at the 2020 American LGBTQ Plus Film Festival. And she's currently filming her newest production, which is Wildfire. So welcome, Jen.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really so excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to hear a little bit about what goes into kind of the production and the filming process, because, you know, I think a lot of us just go and see the films and we don't know all the work that's behind it, and we enjoy what's on the screen and we see the final product, but there's, you know, so much more that goes into it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's so much that people don't understand. You know, I think you watch a movie and you think everybody just shows up wearing clothes, you know, in an atmosphere that has furniture in it, and they all have words in their mouth. And, you know, there's so many people behind the scenes getting all of that stuff prepared and perfected.
Yeah. And so did I miss anything in your introduction? I know you're.
No, that was a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. So we thought we'd just, you know, go through some questions, talk about your latest film, how you get to where you are, you know, screen to page to page to screen. I think I said it in the reverse. So tell us a little bit about your newest film, Wildfire.
Wildfire is a story about seven acquaintances that get radically honest about their lives. It focuses on three couples and a widow who we open with them getting ready in their bedrooms, and we see them at their most, you know, intimate, raw, vulnerable moments and what they're going through honestly, and then cut to they're all guests at a party. And so most of the film is centered at the party, where you see, you know, the first half of it is them with their social masks on and being the couples and the people that they're supposed to be. And then halfway through, the seven characters are the only ones left at the party. And someone gets really honest and vulnerable about what they're going through in their relationship. And it sets the stage for the other couples to decide to be vulnerable or open up about what they're going through. And cut two, or act three, you're back in the bedrooms and you see how they've decided to integrate their new truths or ignore it.
Wow. That is very, yeah. Very deep.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We have seven actors signed up that we're absolutely thrilled to work with. And they're just the perfect embodiment of these characters. So we're thrilled.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like how was it like balancing like the different storylines? Like, do you ever like have trouble like focusing in too much on one versus the other? Or like, what was the biggest like challenge of that?
Well, I've been screenwriting for maybe 7 years now, like from deciding that I wanted to do it to being where I am right now. And I think that was always one of my biggest criticisms from other readers or from people that I paid to give me critiques, was that who's the protagonist? There should only be one. Why are there so many characters? And I just chose to ignore that and chose to hone my craft and create as many characters as I wanted. As long as I understood the principles of storytelling, I knew that I could accomplish these, to me, more organic stories that have many people being influenced and going through challenges and triggering each other and learning from it or choosing not to grow. And to me, that's just always been a more interesting way to tell a story, is how is this person's life affecting this person's life? And how do they intertwine? And how do they affect each other? And those have always been my favorite films that have multiple protagonists. So that's been my journey to hone my craft and ignore what I'm supposed to do and just, you know, really embody the principles of storytelling and break the rules up, so to speak.
So how did you come up with this idea and then get it to, say, the paper where you first start writing down the ideas and develop it into a screenplay?
I'm always gathering nuggets in my life. I have a pile of small notebooks that are about pocket size that I have filled up a dozen of at this point, where I just you know, latch onto something that someone says or what they went through or something that inspires me. And I just take little notes and somehow that's just, you know, building up in my mind. It's very rare that I even refer back to the notebooks, but it's like, I'm just building this arsenal in my imagination. And several years ago, I was at a party with a bunch of acquaintances that I only really knew two of them. The rest of them were strangers. And I had one of the most profoundly enlightening evenings of my life with this group of strangers. And it was like, I think there's a certain safety that comes with anonymity and not knowing each other, not knowing your history. And it just allowed everyone to get really open about their sexuality, about their beliefs, about, you know, we talked about everything from, you know, aliens to Bigfoot to, you know, their first sexual experience and where, how it made them who they are. And I never forgot that. I never forgot how impactful that was. And then to combine that, last summer, I was at a party at the house that we're actually going to be filming at. And we were all sitting around the fire pit. And it was just this lovely ambient moment and experience that we all had together, just sitting and laughing. And I just kind of combined those two ideas and built the characters and what they're going through and how I thought having a moment of safe space would influence them to be more authentic in their life.
So how do you then like translate all that like to the screenplay? You know, like
right. Yeah. I think to me, when I write a script, I've already done the work, right? So some people sit down and they're like, oh, I have writer's block. And it's like, well, that's because you didn't do any work before you sat down at the page. And, you know, if that's how your process works, more power to you, but that's certainly not how my process works. I sit with my own thought for a very long time and take lots of notes and type things out and just really build the world and the characters and the story in a way that when I sit down to start writing, I can already hear the characters and how they speak and how they would interact with each other. And so these characters I spent enough time with to make them alive. And then I sat down and I wrote this particular script rather quickly.
When you say rather quickly, what does that equate to?
Well, I mean, everything's relative, right? So right. let's say my first script has been taking me 7 years to write. I never really finished it. It's still in the drawer. And whereas this script from start to finish, I would say maybe 90 days.
My gosh. Wow.
And that's to where we are now, you know, and they take, you know, I have other scripts that I finished, quote unquote, and then it didn't really feel right. So I threw it in a drawer for 4 years and picked it up. And then in 20 days, it was complete and perfect. And, you know, it's really just about following your intuition and following your gut and not, for me, it's not getting in my head too much. I feel like as soon as I start intellectualizing anything, I'm down a dead end. So I really try to like stay in my heart and stay in my gut with everything.
How would you like describe like the editing process and like taking things out and adding it in and what, like, how, you know, are there like some difficulties with that related to your writing?
You know, it's different for every script. And again, it's really about your intuition. So like going back to my very first script, it was called Always Violet. And it was this long, almost laborious story, but it was also lovely. And it had a lot of really nice nuance to it. And the characters were really jumping off the page, but it was, I knew it was too long. And then I had that confirmed for me from many professionals. So what I ended up doing was years later, I extracted one of the subplots and I brought that and made that its whole own movie. And then I was able to draw from that storyline and build from there. And I actually ended up optioning that script with a producer in LA. His name is Kyle Andrews and it's called Winter Jasmine. So that's on our docket, but that's another one of my multiple protagonist stories that, you know, it's not, I would say it's not something that everyone would say is done correctly, but I think there's a lot of people that just follow the rules. And if you're not following the rules, it's wrong and therefore it's bad. Whereas my encouragement to everyone is follow your most natural instinct and how to tell a story, because on some level, we're all storytellers. You know, that's how we've evolved and survived this long, is being able to tell stories and communicate and share what we're going through and learn from other people's experiences, which is essentially what film is for.
So how does the story change from when you write it to what you're actually filming? Are there many changes? Like, how does that... Yeah. How does that
That is a big question, and I will absolutely attempt to answer it. They say that the last script rewrite happens in the editing room. So you're literally changing and evolving the film until you say, okay, picture is locked, music is finished, add the credits and put it out there. I mean, it is an ever evolving organism. You know, for me, writing Wildfire has been a really new experience because I'm in control of all of it. I'm the producer, I'm the writer, I'm the director. So there's no part of me that needs to kowtow to any person and say, oh, you want this to change? Oh, you want this to be different? Like, I can just control all of it, which is really a dream come true for a creative, and one that doesn't often come true for someone in the film industry, right? Because there's so many moving parts and so many collaborative moments. But with a movie like Rainbow's End, we went through several directors. So every time I thought the script was done and finished and perfect, a new director would come in and say, okay, we're going to change all this stuff. We don't want two protagonists. We want one. We don't want all these locations. We want to do it here. We want it to span 20 years instead of 10. Like, so you just, you're writing. Then you get on to set, right? And I was on set for the entire time in Rainbow's End, which is what led me to know that I want to be so much more than a writer. I want to be the director. I want to be the producer. But when I was on set with Rainbow's End, that was an extremely eye-opening process, because if you run out of time, if you don't have money, if an actor shows up that doesn't know their lines that day, so filming the scene is taking a lot longer than you anticipated, all of a sudden, okay, we don't have time to film these three scenes today. Are we cutting them? If we cut them, then what happens? Does the story change or is the story the same? If the story changes, what else haven't we filmed yet that needs to be adjusted? Oh, you have this, maybe you have an actor that doesn't remember their lines well. So now the director comes in and says, cut their lines, right? Start making it shorter so it's easier for them. Okay, well, what does that change? It's like a Rubik's Cube. You're constantly, okay, I got the whole white side. So, oh, but now the blue side is out of sorts. So now you get the blue side, but now the white side is out of order. So it's like really just having the puzzle in your mind at all times, and knowing that if you move one thing, you're going to have to move 10 other things, and really being able to wrap your head around that.
Wow.
I love that Rubik's Cube analogy. That's perfect.
You know, the producer with me on Rainbow's End, he always would say, you know, just doing the Rubik's Cube, doing the Rubik's Cube. And I never fully understood what he meant until I started producing in addition to writing. Yeah. That is absolutely what filmmaking is. They say if filmmakers aren't problem solvers, what are they? And that is a true statement. Yeah.
So would you want to, like, you know, that kind of opens it up. Would you want to talk about your film Rainbow's End a little bit? Or?
Sure. What specifically would you like me to talk about? There's so much.
Oh, okay. Well, first you ought to like just describe what the movie's about. We'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. Rainbow's End is the story of a prominent lesbian couple back in the 90s that decide to raise a family in the spotlight, and they adopt a child, and there's a lot of behavioral issues, and they get him, you know, seen by a psychologist, and they discover that he has XYY, which back in the 90s was called the murder gene. Right. They did a lot of research that was a little skewed because they did it mostly in prisons. They did the research in prisons. So the research ended up being a little bit skewed, and they were led to believe that having this extra Y chromosome gave children a predisposition for violence. So this story is really about, you know, giving a young child a negative label, having a, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? A self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So you give this child a negative label, and then all of a sudden you've ended up with all of your worst nightmares because you've constantly kind of groomed him to be trouble. So even working in opposition of that grooming, you still end up fulfilling it in some way.
And I've seen this film, Jen, and I loved it. I mean,
it's wonderful.
It's so good. And the one thing that struck me, it's so funny because I was going to ask you this, is you never see the child.
That's correct.
Right. Yes. I have to assume that was a strategic decision.
Yeah. You know, it was one that I made really early on that I had to fight a few people to keep, but I'm really happy that I did. When I was hired to write it, I had rewatched the Hitchcock film Rebecca, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And it struck me how the whole movie is about this character that's dead, essentially, and you never see her, but she's just affecting the lives of everyone around her, even in her death. And I thought, wouldn't that be interesting to see a movie about a child, a troubled child, that you only see his wake? You only see how he affects the relationship of the parents. You know, I've always been really fascinated about how children affect the relationship of their parents and how you really don't gain that perspective sometimes ever, but until you're older and you're able to say, oh, they were just two people doing their best, you know, yeah. And how did I affect their lives, or how did that child affect their lives? And so I really just latched onto that. And there were, I think, two different directors that came onto it, including the one that ended up directing it, Tracy Wren. She really wanted to change that. She wanted to see the child. And Joe and I, the producers, we both just really stuck to our guns. And we said, no, this is what we want. And I think it's successful, you know, especially in the end, when you hear her say, we gave him a label and he lived up to it. You know, now it's all people see. Because I think that's really what happens. You give people a negative label and it precedes them.
I like that. I thought it was impactful because you don't get to see the kid doing any of the actual actions to make your own like kind of decision. You know, you only get the other people's perspective.
Exactly. I think it leads you to question your prejudices and mm-hmm. other people's opinions of people that you solidify without even meeting them.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, the question I have, you know, obviously this is a film with like LGBTQ plus representation, you know, I don't know if you wanted to talk a little about representation and like how film has come, you know, made strides over the years and what strides still need to be made. I know it's kind of a very complicated question, but if you wanted to, you know.
Yeah, I would love to, because I think it is and it isn't. I think, you know, being in college in the early 2000s, I remember owning every lesbian movie that was ever made, and it barely took up any space on my shelf. And so to come from that in my lifetime to where we are now, where, you know, there's LGBTQ plus characters everywhere, I think it's certainly a step in the right direction. But I would also say how often I see those characters as just placeholders or tokens. Or even worse, their sexuality is really irrelevant when you look at their character. I think one instance that really struck me was I Care a Lot. Is that the name of it? The one that came out on Netflix with Rosamund Pike?
Yes.
In my opinion, my humble opinion, that was a straight male character that they said, I have an idea. Let's make her a woman and let's make her a lesbian. And then the character development ended there. Like, to me, if you watch this character, these are things that a woman would never do. These are things that, you know, a more masculine type would do. And then having the lesbian twist, I think it was just their way of filling, you know, what do I know? But watching the film, that's what I felt very strongly. It was like, these aren't characters that are being developed by LGBTQ plus writers. They aren't being directed by LGBTQ plus directors. They aren't being produced either, right? So there's this like lack of attention to detail that just leaves us with a void by that inauthenticity. To me, it's not just about naming them as LGBTQ. It's about actually developing that character and making it integral with the rest of their characteristics. How did this affect the character as they were growing up? How does it affect them now? How do they change the way they speak or the way they act because of this characteristic? So to me, I think we have a long way to go, but I'm very, very grateful that at least there's a lot of momentum moving in that direction towards representation, because it is very important.
Yeah. We had the same conversation last week about the movie and book we did about, you know, like a token character, but they never really developed. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's difficult. Cause like you said, sometimes it's just a placeholder and you don't get to see that character evolve.
Yeah, definitely. And really you don't get to see how that affects them, how it molds them. Right. It's like a capitalism thing where it's like, okay, we need to check all of these boxes. Like even what they're doing with the Academy now, where they're saying, okay, we're going to have a board that says, these are all of the things that movies need to tick in order to be up for an Academy Award. And to me, it's like, okay, I see why you're doing that and why you're going there, but oh, good God, talk about like the rape of creativity. It's like, there aren't always gay characters in a film. There aren't always white characters in a film. There aren't always people of color characters in a film. Like sometimes a story just is a story and you just need to let it be organically what it is and not try to micromanage everything so that everyone can relate. It's like at some point you need to say, do I relate to this story? Is this a human story? Right. And that's what I'm interested in telling, human stories. You know, is there sexuality sexuality at the forefront. A lot of times in my stories, they are because I'm telling stories about sexual awakenings. But if it's not, then it doesn't need to be at the forefront of it. Like, let's all learn to relate to being human. That's where I come from.
Yeah. And I think you hear people say that a lot about writing, right? Like, you're not going to relate to everything in the story, but are you relating to an underlying feeling or theme or something that they're going through that it's not always exact? Can you relate to it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The humanity of it all. To me, yeah, that's the most important part.
Yeah. But one thing on comment I want to make, I thought was, you know, kind of interesting is that, like, in your film Rainbow's End, you include, like, the actress Sean Young is in it. And it's kind of funny how, you know, she's very famous for her role in Ace Ventura, which is considered one of, like, the most horrible representations of transgender characters. So now it's, like, almost like coming, like, full circle, almost.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And hey, you have to start somewhere, right? I mean,
yeah,
we all have to come from something. We all have to say, okay, this is the lack of understanding that we came from, and now we're understanding it and we're speaking about it and we're communicating how it makes us feel and what our experiences are, and then we can build a more well-rounded character from it. I mean, that's the journey, right, of film evolution, is being more accurate with our representation of people and not making assumptions, not making, you know, blanket statements about whole groups of people.
Speaking of, like, actors that you worked with, I did want to ask you that, you know, on the film, you did get to work with the late, great Ed Asner. So I don't know if you want to, like, talk a little about him, because he's, you know, obviously, like, had a legendary career. So I thought
he absolutely that was really did. Cool. Yeah. that was an incredible moment, just learning that he was signing on. It was, you know, I'd say mid pre-production, we brought on Tracy Wren as the director, and she had worked with him previously on a short film called Autism and Cake. And she said, you know, I think we could get Ed to play Gunny, which was the father of the main character. And we sent him the script, and very soon after, he loved it. He wanted to be a part of it, and he was signed on. And it was really a very magical moment for me, especially to be able to say to my grandmother, hey, we got Ed Asner, you know, because there's so little that she can relate to with the films that I make, that it was nice to have that, share that moment with her. And it was really cool because the day on set that he was there, he was only there for one day and we filmed all of his scenes. It was very different on set that day. Very reverent, very, you know, referential with him. It's like we brought him to the second floor, which is where we were going to be filming. And then everything rotated around the second floor that day. We all, you know, brought our food up there and ate there instead of on the third floor or wherever. And, you know, he took time to take pictures with all of us and to interact with him. And he was just a lovely man. And I remember I went up to him and my sleeve tattoo was showing, and he was like, "Oh, you're a tough guy, huh?" Which I thought was so funny. And I introduced myself as the writer, and he goes, "What did you write?" He's just like a total ball buster. And it was just really fun interacting with him, and having that day with him was really something I'll always remember.
So how do you, and I know I follow you on some social media and you were looking for casting. So how do you go about casting? Like, I know your newest film, like, you were looking at casting. So, you know, how do you go about trying to find the right cast?
Yeah. You know, I think casting is really one of the most interesting and exciting parts of pre-production. I didn't get to participate in that at all in Rainbow's End. And I really wanted to. So now having that opportunity to handle it completely was really, really thrilling. We built a call sheet, which is essentially, you know, the poster, all the different aspects of the production that people would need to know about, the dates, you know, how much they're being paid, all of that stuff. And then a big outline of the characters. Here's our main characters and who they are. And then we chose different scenes from the script to let them audition with. So, like, each character had their own scene to audition with. And then we just went on every acting website that I could find and just posted the call. We posted it even on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook. And just, we really wanted to get it cast as wide a net as possible. And we ended up getting over 1,000 submissions within like 2 weeks, which was incredible. And, you know, what way is there to go through those, but one at a time. So we went through all of the lovely audition self-tapes that people sent in and just started parsing out the ones that felt right and declining the ones that didn't. And here we are. We actually just casted our final role yesterday, the role of Noah. So our seven characters are casted and we're doing a table read via Zoom tomorrow for the crew, which is very exciting, which is a big part of pre-production.
Wow, that is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie, do you have any other questions? Or anything you want to talk about?
No, I think we covered a lot and, you know, just happy to talk to you and, you know,
yeah, this was
really
great.
Your experiences. Yeah,
you gave us so much insight and did you have anything else you wanted to add or talk about, Jen?
No, I mean, if you guys don't have any other questions, I mean, I'm happy to talk about, you know, the process of production or, I mean, really any how things go on set working with actors or like, I'm really happy to talk about anything, but if you guys feel like you have enough, I'm satisfied, whatever you want to do.
No, I mean, I think I think we could talk all day.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I know you mentioned that you are the house that you're going to be filming in, mm-hmm. you were actually at. So how do you come up with the set, like the setting for your movie?
Well, that was just something that I am extremely fortunate to have a connection to. My dear friend owns the home and I asked her, hey, how would you feel about your house being in a movie? And, you know, at first this was a short film before I had finished the script. My plan was to do like a 20 to 30 page script and film in a week. And I said, you know, how would you feel about a film crew in your house for a week? And she said, oh my God, I'd be thrilled. That would be incredible. And so she's been very gracious and open to it the entire time. And then shortly after I continued my writing process, I said, hi, how would you feel about us being there for 2 weeks? Because suddenly the script was 70 pages and I knew we needed 2 weeks to film it now being a feature. And she couldn't have been more gracious about it. She said, I don't care if you guys are here for a month. I'm thrilled. So cool. Yeah. So now we have this gorgeous home to fill in, that we're going to be there for, 7 days. And then the first 3 days of production will be at Airbnb's filming the opening and closing bedroom scenes of each of the characters.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean, that's another thing, right? Is the set. So yeah. Our original plan was to do the whole thing in the house and take each of the bedrooms and make them look like they were other locations. But because this home is such a pristine and perfectly designed and manicured home, it was very difficult to disguise one room as not being a part of the home. Like the windows all kind of have the same aesthetic and the walls have the same color palette. So very quickly we said, I don't think this is going to be convincing. So we started seeking out other locations and it made the most sense to go to an Airbnb because there wouldn't be anyone living there, right? Then we wouldn't have to like work around a family or someone occupying the space. So we decided to shoot 3 days in different Airbnbs to really give the characters' homes their own energy and their own vibe.
Wow, that's really neat. That's mm-hmm. very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the house is so beautiful that set dressings isn't really a worry or even a thought. It's like that. Let's just let the house be as it is. And then if there's any props that we need to interact with in the film, those are things that we'll bring in. But for the most part, the space is as they will be shot as is.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of circle back to, I guess, the beginning, like, how did you get into this? Because I know you mentioned you're from, you know, a small town in Pennsylvania, and here you are producing and directing and, you know, writing movies. And that's very, I think people don't think you have to be in Hollywood or New York City or something to break into that and do that. But, you know, you have kind of proved otherwise.
Yeah, it was an interesting journey. You know, when I graduated from college, I immediately started working at my family's business, you know, behind a desk in an administrative position. And I would say about 10 years into that, I was just so unfulfilled, certainly because my creativity wasn't having any sort of expressive outlet. And I remember the one night I was sitting on the couch after dinner and my wife, who is an artist, JFO Generation is her stuff.
Yes. One of the nicest people I know.
Yes. Yes. Same. The one night she said to me, what do you think about? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I think about my drawings. I think about my art. I think about painting and I think about my creations a lot. What do you think about? And my answer was really disturbing to me because I said nothing. And I realized that my soul was very gradually but surely being drained from being in a corporate environment all day. And she said, well, what do you want to do? Like, if you could do anything, what would you want to do? And I said, I don't know. I've always wanted to write a movie. And she was like, what? Like, I've never heard you say this ever. And I said, I don't know if I've ever conceptualized it until this moment. And she said, well, then we're going to do it. You're just going to do it. And from that moment, I started taking classes and reading books and going to seminars and lectures and taking, you know, certification classes. And, you know, I used my small photography background to kind of break into the whole world of like cinematography and composition and all of that. And my poetry background to influence how I wrote scripts. And I applied for a job and, you know, I never thought I would get it. And that night I got a call and it was Joe from Rainbow's End. And he and I spoke for 45 minutes and I immediately knew what he wanted to do with the story and the characters. And he said, okay, well, I got about 200 applications for this job. I want to give it to you right now, but I consciously have to go through each of these. And within a week, I had the job.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that whole journey led me to know I wanted to direct. So here I am.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really just about following your heart. That's, you know, we all
so inspiring.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, we all have an inner tug to do something important, you know, whether it's on a small scale or a large scale. And to me, the most important thing we could do with our life is follow that.
Really cool.
Well, I think we should wrap on that inspiring message because that, I don't know that we could top that. That is just so amazing.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This was really wonderful. I love chatting with you guys.
Thank you so much for offering a different perspective to our listeners this week and, you know, just sharing all of your knowledge with us. And I'm so excited for your next film. And we will be back next week with another book. So listeners, keep reading
and keep watching.